Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, now at the 12th in Elgin, Texas. Today is January 16, 2023, Ardha Shiva 25, 26.
So the storm passes by, the dark of the midnight, the heart did not fade. How the storm had all left of me, and there's no hiding place. If the crash of the thunder crushes yard in my truck, keep me safe till the storm passes by. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds that roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of thy hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. Any time Satan whispers, there is no use to try, for there's no end of sorrow, there's no hope, not end by. But I know thy heart's with me, and tomorrow I'll rise. Where the storm never darkened the sky. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the cloud flows forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of thy hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. When the long night has ended and the storms come no more, let me find in thy presence on the bright and peaceful shore, in the land where the tempest never come yet may hard, love it be when the storm passes by. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of thy hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by.
We're gonna do part two now of Born to a Lewd Mother, Timely Greetings, Volume 2, Number 21, of Vicky Hara. And we're on page 8. We'll back up and do just a little bit of a review. It says, on page 21, Hosea chapter 1, verse 11, it says, then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together and appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. Here we are definitely told that in the latter days, Yahweh's saints, without a sinner among them, are to be gathered together from the four corners of the earth and be organized into a theocratic government, of which the antitypical David is to be the king. So we have type and antitype, we have typical David, and we know how he came on the scene in his day as a young shepherd boy coming to the camp last day that Israel's army under King Saul was challenged to a fight, one man upon one man, to determine who is to rule over each other. And King Saul would accept the challenge. They were in their last day, which was the 40th day, to accept the challenge or to go into battle and have an all-out battle between the two armies. David came in on the 40th day, and we know the rest of the story. He took up the challenge. He defeated Goliath, the power of Yahweh, the Holy Spirit, and he won the great battle for Israel. Yahweh made a covenant with David after that, that in the last days he would rule over the kingdom of Israel. He would have an antitypical David that would be set up in these last days. And that's who we are representing right here, preparing ourselves for this antitypical installment of this kingdom, everlasting kingdom. The prophecy is found in Daniel 2:44 and 45. In the days of these kings shall the Yahweh of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed or left to other people. So it's in the days of these kings, not after their days. It says here that the Yahweh of heaven sets up a kingdom which shall not be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain. What stone is it? What stone is this? It represents the antitypical kingdom of David. David and Yahshua together. Yahshua is the chief cornerstone in his temple. The stone was cut out of the mountain. So it means that the everlasting kingdom of David, with the antitypical David at the head of it, was cut out of that mountain by Yahshua himself. And this is where the 144,000 are going to be harvested to by Yahshua, to this great mountain that's represented by this little stone that's cut out of the mountain. Okay, with hand, and that it shall break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver and the gold. The great Yahweh has made known unto the King Nebuchadnezzar what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof is sure. Daniel 2:44 and 45. Another allegorical prophecy, in the connection with this one, we are again told in Hosea chapter 3, verse 4 and 5, for the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king, and without a prince, and without a sacrifice, and without an image, and without an ephod, and without teraphim. After shall the children of Israel return and seek the Yahshua, Yahweh their Yahweh, and David their king, and shall fear the Yahweh and his goodness in the latter days. They're going to fear the Yahweh the Father. His Son is his first goodness. The 144,000 in the kingdom of David is Yahshua's goodness. All of them together makes up Yahweh the Father's goodness, his everlasting kingdom that is set up by his Son and his underservant, antitypical David. Here again, the promises are as plain as words can make them, that after the dispersion and captivity of the many days, Yahweh's scattered people are then to return unto their homeland. and are then to seek to yes, Yahweh their Father, and Yahshua their Savior and Redeemer, and David their King, visible and typical King of David. Hence these sons of Yahweh are not the identified and unbelieving Jews of today who are trying to make a permanent national home in the Promised Land. For the believers have for the centuries preached that the kingdom of Yahweh, that of the kingdom of Yahweh, but it is not as yet clear unto most of them whether it be is to be as tangible as the earth itself, or whether it is to be something foamy, something floating in space, or what inspiration, however clearly, declares that the kingdom of the Yahshua as the church purified, cleansed, Daniel 8:14, is to be as real as any of the kingdoms of the earth. Now we shall continue our study through the Hosea chapter 2, because, as I said before, its contents are the continuation of those in chapter 1. Hosea chapter 2, 1 to 3. Say ye unto your brethren, Ami, and unto your sisters, Ruama. Plead with your mother, Seventh-day Adventist Church, plead, for she is not my wife. So the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists is not the wife of Yahweh, the Father, or his Son today. Neither am I, says, and neither am I her husband. Let her therefore put away her whoredoms out of her sight. That's first chapter 20, darkness of the three in one person of the Godhead, that those Jesuits of the Catholic Church have so successfully infiltrated the Adventist Church with their invisibility, have been the ministers as Jesuits and not really Adventist ministers. And they are perpetuating that false Trinity doctrine of the three in one person of the Godhead that they've got the whole world wrapped in. And that's the Protestant churches as well. Therefore, put away her whoredoms out of her sight, and her adulteries from between her breasts. Lest I strip her naked, and set her as in the day that she was born, and make her as a wilderness, and set her like a dry land, and slay her with thirst. Let us remember that the first chapter brought us down through the stream of time, down to the antitypical apostolic era. Now in the chapter 2, our attention is again directed unto Hosea's visionary children. But the prefix lo has been omitted from the names Lo Ruhamah and Lo Ami, so as to change the meaning from no mercy and not my people under mercy and my people. And this unique symbolism fashioned years before before the Christian dispensation, inspiration actually before the apostolic dispensation. Inspiration foreshadowed the grace that was to be given unto the people in the antitypical apostolic era, and that rather than continue to be called Jews, which is a slang name for the tribe of Judah, not the other 11 tribes, they were to be called by another title, Christians, mercy and my people. For the command, say ye unto your brethren, Amen, and unto your sisters, Ruama. In itself explains that Yahweh, that the Yahweh is speaking unto the Jezreel. And Ruama's brother, and that Jezreel in turn is to speak unto Ami and to Ruama. And the fact that Yahweh calls Hosea's visionary wife his own wife, the subject becomes still clearer. Hosea, you see, represents Yahweh, and Hosea's wife represents Yahweh's church, Jezreel. The one Yahweh speaks to represents his mouthpiece, a prophet, and Jezreel's brethren, Ami and Ruama, represents the members of the church, both male and female. Now, as Ami and Ruama represents the laity, it is obvious that the mother represents the ministry, those who bring forth converts into the church. Here we have a complete representation of the household of the Yahweh. Okay. For the fact that the Jezreel is to urge his brethren, the laity, to plead with the mother, with the ministry, to choose those who bring forth converts, that she put away her whoredom. For the truth clearly stands out that this revival and reformation does not come unto the laity through the ministry, but to the ministry through the laity. For the laity is to explain that if the ministers fail to reform, Yahweh is to strip them naked, as naked as in the day they were born. So it says, in Hosea chapter 2, verse 4 and 5, and I will not have mercy upon her children, for they be the children of whoredom. For their mother hath played the harlot. She that conceived them hath done shamefully, for she said, I will go after my lover, and give me my bread and my water, by my wool and my flax, my oil and my drink. These verses set forth Yahweh's meaning of grace, that if the mother fails to reform, fails to cease from her whoredom with the world and its practices, then not only the mother, but also her sympathizing children will forever fall from grace. That's what's happening with the Adventist Church today by embracing this false Catholic Trinity doctrine of the three in one persons of the Godhead. For the mother here, we are told, imagines that her unlawful lovers are the ones who supply her with the temporal things of life. And it is her excuse for having anything to do with them. Moreover, we are again told that while she is thus playing the harlot, she is bringing forth illegitimate children, unto converts. Here is a warning, in which, in no uncertain terms, demands a reformation, or else the whole church family, except for those who reform, will be destroyed as completely as ancient Jerusalem was destroyed some years after the crucifixion of Yahshua. Hosea 2:6-13. Therefore, behold, I will hedge up thy way with the thorns and make a wall that she shall not find her path, and she shall follow after her lovers, but she shall not overtake them, and she shall seek them, but shall not find them. Then shall she say, I will go and return unto my first husband. For then was it better with me than now. For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil, and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. Therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof, and my wine in the season thereof, and will recover my wool, and my flesh given to cover her nakedness. And now will I discover her lewdness in the sight of her lover, and none shall deliver her out of my hand. I will also cause all her mercy to see, her feast days, her new moons, and her Sabbath, and all her solemn feasts. And I will destroy her vines and her fig tree, whereof she hath said, these are my rewards that my lovers have given me, and I will make them a forest, and the beast of the field shall eat them. And I will visit upon her the days of the Balaam, wherein she burned incense unto them. And she decked herself with her earrings and her jewel, and she went after her lovers and forgot me, saith the Yahweh. These verses explain that the Yahweh's way and power to save before he calls for the reformation, he prepares the way. He brings his church into the trying and perplexing circumstances from which she cannot easily disengage herself. He brings her into a situation similar to which he brought the prodigal. He does this in order that she might be brought to realize where her support the reality comes from, to know for certain that it does not come from her lovers. Then and then only, may she do the very thing that the prodigal did when he came unto himself. In the fulfillment of the prophecy contained in verse 11, Yahweh permitted the little horn of Daniel 7 to change times and laws, and permitted the saints of the Most High to be in his hand until a time and times and the dividing of time, Daniel 7:25. Hosea 2:14-15, therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness, and speak comfortably unto her, and I will give her her vineyards from thence, and the valley of Acre for a door of hope. And she shall sing there as in the the days of her youth, and in the day when she camped out of the land of Egypt. Hosea 2:14 having brought her into a strait and embarrassing circumstances, as one can be in, Yahweh promises to allure her and to bring her into the wilderness. Now, that's where I spent 33 and a half years as well, as literally out there in the wilderness of West Texas among the sand dunes. We had a row of sand dunes running for 30 miles, just 12 miles from our city. There to speak comfortably unto her, specifically speaking, having emerged from the great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world, Matthew 24:21, Yahweh brings her not into her vineyard, not into the promised land, but into the wilderness, into the lands of the Gentiles. That's where we're at today, here in Texas, as part of the land of the Gentiles of the United States. There to speak comfortably unto her and to help her reform. After this comforting meeting takes place, she is to have her vineyards from thence and the valley of the acre for a door of hope. There she is to sing and rejoice as in the days of her youth and as in the day she came out of Egypt. For the Valley of Acre, you know, is her door of hope. It is the only way out of her predicament. For the valley has the one significance, for it stands for a thorough purging, for the destroying of the sinners that are in her midst before passing or for possessing the promised land, her only hope of becoming a decent, respectable wife of the Yahweh. It was in the Valley of Achor that Joshua stoned the last of the sinners and Israel for the Achan and his household. And it was that the Israelite nation was permitted to take the promised land, the vineyard. Just such a purging as this is the church's only door of hope, says inspiration. Her only escape from her present plight. Then she is to return unto her former position and grace. Then she is to receive the promised blessing as verily as the ancient Israel received hers. That remarkable incident in the Valley of Acre is now seen to typify the purging for the repossession of the promised land, typifying the judgment for the living, the gathering of the saints to the 144,000 first fruits first from the Adventist church, and the destruction of the sinners, the terrors left in her, son of Matthew, the separation of the wheat from the tares, the goats from the sheep, the good fish from the bad fish, the barn, Matthew 13:30, connotes the kingdom here, projected as does the Yahshua's right, and as do vessels, Hosea 2:16. And it shall be at that day, saith the Yahweh, that thou shalt call me Ishi, and shalt call me no more Belai. Yes, rather than to be her Lord, Yahweh is indeed to be her husband. For one can have the Lord's many, but only one husband. Hosea 2:17, for I will take away the names of the Balaam out of her mouth, and they shall no more be remembered by their name. For the names of Balaam are significant of the person possessing selfish churches such as Balaam's teachers of religion, prophets who would rather curse Israel than lose the opportunity of the momentary gain, or of the son of the foolish, selfish promotion that exalts and flatters, such shall then no longer be known by their lordly, high, and exalted title. When the church is thus purged of all her idols, then rush she find eternal peace. Hosea 2:18-22. And in that day will I make a covenant of feast, make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, and with the fowls of the heaven, and with the creeping things of the ground. And I will break the bow and the sword, and the battle of the earth, and will make them to lie down in safety. And I will be sure, thee unto me forever. Yea, I will be troth thee unto me in righteousness, and in judgment, and in loving kindness, and in mercy. I will even be troth thee unto me in the faithfulness, and thou shalt know the Yeshua, and it shall come to pass in that day that I will hear, saith the Yeshua, I will hear the heaven, and they shall hear the earth, and the earth shall hear the corn, and the wine, and the oil, and they shall hear Jezreel. Okay, these verses plainly show that Yahweh's presence will in that day be in His church, that even the heavens shall be listening unto Yahweh's voice while He speaks unto His people here on the earth. For the earth shall also hear the corn and the wine and the oil, that is, the earth shall hear the truth that satisfies the soul as does the wholesome and nourishing food. Moreover, not only the corn, the wine, and all the whole truth, but Jezreel too, shall the earth hear. Plainly, all of these promises are to be fulfilled during the probationary time here in the left. 12th parabolic hour that we're in right now, the last parabolic hour of Earth's history, and the harvest time for the living and the dead, for they cannot do the earth any good after the probationary time is exhausted. For the Israel of whose blood ancient Israel was charged guilty, you see, was figurative of the prophets whom Israel rejected and killed. Thus it is that the prophet-hating house of Israel met defeat in the valley of Jezreel, which by the interpretation is in the valley of the slain prophets. Hosea 2:23, and I will sow her unto me in the earth, and I will have mercy upon her that had not obtained mercy, and I will say unto them which were not my people, thou art my people, and they shall say, thou art my elder. For the sowing her unto me in the earth means for the multiplying of her children and the Yahweh's order after she receives all these promised blessings. Then she will surely have Yahweh's mercy, such a great mercy as she has never before obtained. Unto those unto whom it was said, "You are not my people," it shall then, in the grand reality, be said that you are the sons of the living Yahweh. Now, that the whole truth of these chapters is disclosed for the first time, since the prophet wrote them, and since no prophecy of the scripture is of any private interpretation, nor by the will of man, but by the will of the Spirit, 2 Peter 1, 20-21. By the will of the Spirit. For the fact is that Yahweh has us, had us in the mind, us under whom these chapters are unfolded, when he caused these things to be written. Moreover, since the first verses of the second chapter bring us down unto the time of a revival and reformation. That means a new movement. That means a whole new movement in the earth. The Adventist Church had the fourth next to the last movement in 1844, but we have the fifth, the antitypical Kingdom of David. We have the fifth and the last movement for Israel and the earth. The fourth movement for the Adventists was in the 10th hour and the 11th, and the 12th is in for the I call them branch division, Seventh Day Adventists of the House of David. That's who we are, and brought to light through the Jezreel, then carried into the Seventh Day Adventist Church by the Lady, is a work that fulfills itself only in this layman's movement that is now sweeping throughout the Seventh Day Adventist world. For this truth, therefore, stands as high as a mountain, that Yahweh is not at work, that things are to move according unto his divine purpose. So it is that they shall hear Jezreel, and that Yahweh himself shall say unto them, "Thou art my people," that they too shall say, "Thou art our Yahweh." For the inspiration thus shows that our efforts with this message are absolutely certain to effect the greatest reformation of all time, that the children rebuke to the mother is surely, and is surely to bring peace and happiness into the household of Yahweh. We therefore have every reason to be as positive of winning and as anxious to work as was the ancient David when he faced the giant Goliath. Here it is that the children only, the children laity born unto a lewd woman church, brings peace and happiness in the family of Yahweh. You must, therefore, not fail to wholeheartedly and actually join this mighty layman's movement for a revival reformation throughout Laodicea and to finish the gospel work with a church. Fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners. She is to go forth into all the world, conquering and to conquer. Prophecies, James, page 725. You cannot afford to lose out. end of our study of Two Towns Agree, number 21. And we have some time, I guess, left on our tape, about 23 minutes. We can go back and pick up some of the beginning of this. Let's go back and pick up the tail end of the number 20. Town of Green, volume 2, number 20. And let's see what we got there. And that's entitled, "The Lead of Sins Perish Without the Message for the Lead of Sin." Okay, now this is a text of address back in December the 27th, 1947. It starts with Revelation 3:15-17. And this is a prophecy that was made to Verla W. Johnson by Yeshua himself there in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. At the Passover, Yeshua came there and he said to Verla Johnson, "I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hard. I would that thou wert cold or hard. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with the goods and have need of the nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable, and poor, and blind, and naked. What greater deception can come upon the human mind than a confidence that they are right when they are all wrong? For the message of the true witness finds the people of the Yahweh in a sad deception." That was Gilead Center, 2002. "Yet honest in their deception, for they know not that their condition is deplorable in the sight of the Yahweh. While those addressed are flattering themselves that they are in an exalted spiritual condition, the message of the true witness," Yahshua is the true witness, Revelation 1:5, Revelation 3:14, "breaks your carnal security. By the startling denunciation of their true condition of the spiritual blindness, poverty, and wretchedness, where the testimony so cutting and severe cannot be a mistake, for it is the true witness who speaks, and the testimony must be correct." Testimony, Volume 3, 252-253. "And people are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked, as are the lead of sin, and do not know it, then the only title that can be given them is deceived. Yet ironically, the lead of sins are the people most fearful of being deceived. They think themselves in the need of nothing, although the Yeshua himself says that they are in need of everything. For they think themselves rich and increased with goods. What goods? Not money, I am sure. For right along, we hear them calling for money and even begging for it. It is with this supposedly sufficient Bible truth that they are satisfied, for they are confident that they have all the revealed truth that they need for taking them through into the kingdom. This is their great deception, for they do not know that their great need of the truth. Now while the church is about to enter upon the final phase of her work, they do not realize that this next phase of the church's work cannot be carried on without her old faith of the truth. For the church can no more do without the additional message, early writing 277, than should she at the closing of the Old Testament era have entered the antiquated apostolic dispensation with the Old Testament ceremonial truth isolated from the gospel. But sad to say, to speak unto the little sins of the more truth than what they already have is to incur their greatest displeasure, and the idea that they need no more truth, that they have it all, and that someone is always trying to deceive them, have been drilled into them as deeply as it can be drilled. This has made them prejudiced and superstitious, or suspicious of everyone who dares approach them with something new. This is what puts them in as sad a position as the Jews of old. Plain it is that if the latest sin's truth thus to remain lukewarm, satisfied, and their deception, they shall be spewed out and forever left without hope. Revelation 3:18. I counsel thee to buy me gold tried in the fire, that thou mayest be rich in white raiment, that thou mayest be clothed, and that the shame of thy nakedness do not appear, and anoint thine eyes with the eyes that thou mayest see. Now this is Yahshua talking out of his own mouth, the John the Revelator. For the gold tried in the fire obviously represents the inspired truth for this time. Inspired truth for this time. For the only truth that saves, as the only kind Yahweh would sell, what can be the white raiment which the true witness urges them to buy, if not the righteousness of the Yahshua. Yahshua being the true witness, and he's the one that's saying these words to John the Revelator for the letter to send church to the Adventists of these last days. And what must one do to obtain these? We shall find the answer in Micah 6:5. O my people, remember now what Balak, king of Moab, consulted, and what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him from the Shem unto the Gilgal, that you may know the righteousness of the Yahshua. Here we are admired. Okay, admonished. Here we are admonished to remember Balak's question and Balaam's answer. If we would know the righteousness of Yahshua, let us turn unto Numbers 24:17-24. I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh. There shall come a star out of Judah. What is that star? That's the star of David. And a scepter, which has the insignia on it of the lion of the tribe of Judah, is the banner, shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, which are cousins to the house of Abraham, and destroy all the children of Seth. And Edom, that's where Esau the firstborn of Isaac, that's where he presided over the kingdom of Edom, which is not the kingdom of Israel. And there's no way connected, except connected indirectly. And Edom shall be a possession. Seir also, that's S-E-I-R, Seir, also shall be a possession for the enemies. And Israel shall be, shall do valiantly. Out of Jacob shall come he that shall have dominion. So it says, out of the Jacob shall come he that shall have the dominion and shall destroy him that remaineth of the city. Okay, that took place in Kermit 2002. And when he is looked and when he looked on the Amalek, he took up his parable and said, Amalek was the first of the nations, but his latter end shall be that he perished forever. And he looked on the Kenites and took up his parable and said, strong is our dwelling place. Strong is our dwelling place, and thou puttest not, and thou puttest thy nest in a rock. Nevertheless, the Kenite shall he be wasted, until Asher shall carry thee away captive. And he took up his parable and said, alas, who shall live when the Yahweh, when the Yahshua's death, when the Yahshua doeth this? Let's do it again. And he took up his parable and said, alas, who shall live when the Yahweh doeth this? And ships shall come from the coast of Chittim, and shall afflict Asher, and shall afflict Eber, and he also shall perish forever. Obviously, this is a prophecy of the Yahshua having taken the reins in his own hand at Kermit, Texas, Passover 2002, from the Reverend W. Johnson, as the last minister of the seventh candlestick of Laodicea, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, that had the office of inspiration in the third and last feeding ground for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, for the closing out of the sixth seal, and the judgment of the dead, and for the closing out of the three angels' message work for the Seventh-day Adventist. Testimonies and ministrations, such is his righteousness, that we are urged to know. So that would be the organized kingdom of David that would have it. Concretely speaking, knowing of the righteousness of the Yahshua is knowing wholeheartedly that in the latter days he is to take, the scepter, that he is to reign. What does it say in Genesis 49:10, the prophecy on that? For a scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Well, here's the fulfillment of that. That at the outset, he is to smite the corners of Moab and destroy all the children of Sheth, that Edom and Seir shall be a possession for the enemy, that Israel shall do valiantly, that he shall have dominion, and so on, according unto the scripture, This is our righteousness of Yeshua if we know it. And he who realizes that the reign of Yeshua and his kingdom is not something intangible, not something imaginary floating in space, as it were, somewhere across hell, but a real thing, as real as any of the kingdoms today, will immediately inquire, as did the Apostle Paul, "What wilt thou have me to do, Yahweh?" This we shall again see from the prophecy of the Micah. It says, Micah 6, 6 and 7, "Wherewith shall I come before the Yahweh, or the Yahshua, and bow myself before the high Yahweh? Shall I come before him with a burnt offering, with the calves of a year old? Will the Yahshua be pleased with the thousands of rams, or with the 10,000s of the rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul?" For this inquiry by the people and the unfolding of this scripture reveals what they think would be most pleasing unto the Yahshua. They think a gift of some kind from the material things is perhaps the most acceptable gift they can offer for the remission of their sins. We with our own eyes actually see this very thing throughout our churches, for this same condition obtained in the days of the Yahshua's first advent. The Jews were very particular about paying their tithe, okay? Even on the minutest item of the income, on such as meant Ananias and Cummin. But they omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and fruit, and faith. Matthew 23:23. For the honest tithing was for their credit, said the Yahshua. But tithing should never replace judgment, mercy, and faith. Faith, what is that faith in? Faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant. For the same answer comes to us today through the prophet Micah 6:8. "He has showed thee, O man, what is good, and what doth the Yahweh require of thee, but to do justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy Yahweh." Once having caught the vision of the great need for the revival and reformation of the fifth and last movement, let's call it the 11th parabolic hour, at the end of the 11th parabolic hour, 2002 at Kermit, Texas. That's Matthew 20, verse 6. Yahweh's people are willing to do almost anything, even for the sacrificing of their firstborn. Further information, inspiration, advice. Micah 6:9, "Hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed it?" These are Yahweh's answers unto the question, "Wherewith shall I come before the Yahweh and bow myself before the high Yahweh?" Since we are asked to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with our Yahweh, it must be that we as a people are not practicing these things. that there is dishonesty, inconsiderateness, and pride. We are glad, though, that we are not hopelessly condemned for our iniquities, but that we are invited to give them up, to forsake them, if we expect to stand on the Mount Zion with the Lamb. Okay, through the prophet Ezekiel we are shown wherein the abuse of the gift of the mercy and justice. That's in Ezekiel 34, 21, 22, and 31. Well, this brings in verse 15. Contact us at the 11th hour call. I've never let me click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.
Whosoever will. Whosoever heareth, hath shift the song. Send the blessed tidings all the world around. With the joyful news, every man is found. Whosoever will come. Whosoever will, whosoever will. Send the proclamation over Bethlehem Hill. He's a loving Father. As I wander home, resurrected world may come. Whosoever cometh, need not delay. Now the door is open, enter by ye may. Now shiver the truth, our only living way. Whosoever will may come. Send the proclamation over Bethlehem Hill. There's a loving Father, cause a wonder home. Whosoever will may come. Whosoever will, a promise secure. Whosoever will, forever must endure. Whosoever will, tis not forevermore. Whosoever will, may